The following program brought to you by Comprehensive Financial Consultants and CFCI, which is solely responsible for its content. Securities are offered through J.W. Cole Financial, member FINRA and SIPC. Investment advice offered through CFCI and J.W. Cole Advisors. J.W. Cole Financial, J.W. Cole Advisors, and CFCI are unaffiliated entities. The opinions expressed by the members of CFCI and their guests should not be construed as specific investment, legal, or tax advice. All economic and performance information is historical and not indicative of future results. Investing may involve the risk of loss of principal, and any tax advice on the show is not intended to be used by any persons for the purpose of avoiding U.S. federal or state tax. Penalties that may be imposed on such persons and each listener should seek advice from their tax advisor or legal counsel on topics that arise from the show. The representatives of CFCI and their guests are not providing legal or tax advice, and nothing should be construed as a solicitation to offer or buy securities. Now enjoy the show. Welcome to the big show, Your Money with David Hayes. Thank you very much for hanging out with me. I was listening to that disclosure and it says something about avoiding taxes. Well, you know, I mean, we all want to avoid taxes. You just don't want to evade. There's a big difference between evade and avoid. Last time I checked, it was about 20 years. So I'm okay with avoiding. Just don't evade. We have a fun show today. A lot of great things to talk about. Rod will join me in just a few minutes. I have inflation concerns on people's minds. Even Janet Yellen was pretty fired up and then backpedaled a little bit on Wednesday of this week. So we have a lot of great things to talk about. Looking forward to a good show. Of course, we're going to start off with News of the Week brought to you by a couple different folks, Unrivaled Electric. They're the full-service electrical contractor you're looking for. They specialize in generators like mine and solar arrays. They're veteran-owned, and Unrivaled Electric wants to be your electrician. I have a couple GFIs out I saw last night, so I'm going to be giving them a call, figure out what's going on. But give them a call if you want to get ahead of me at 812-361-3604, Unrivaled Electric. Also, Kenny Bland Auctions, teched with Dirk last night, matter of fact. They're your full-service auction service. They offer the pre-planning, the sale of your estate or real estate. More importantly, if you want to buy something, jump online at KennyBlandAuctions.com. It's a lot of fun, in fact, to look at all of the merchandise they have for sale. And once again, I haven't been in to update my estate plan, but I need to get to you, Lance, at the Like Law Group. Give yourself and your family the peace of mind that comes with the proper estate planning that you all need. Give Lance a call at the Like Law Group, 323-8300. You know, I have to get in there and get this thing updated. But unlike the rest of you, the shoemaker kids never have shoes. Well, not completely that bad, but I do tend to put things off like everyone else. The S&P 500 has gained 5.3% in April, putting the index up over 11% year to date. That's a pretty solid run so far this year. The Biden White House, they announced their third stimulus proposal since taking office on January 20th. The American Family Plan, that was $1.8 trillion. The American Rescue Plan, that was another $1.9 trillion. And now the American Jobs Plan. You hear that word plan always in the plan? $2.3 trillion. That's an infrastructure proposal. That was released just at the end of March. We're going to get into that a little bit later in the program on how we're going to pay for all this. 90% of the estimated 50 million households in the U.S. have children under the age of 18, and they qualify for the expanded tax credit coming. That's part of the rescue plan. That's $300 per month per child, ages 6 and under, $2,250 per child between the ages of 6 and 17. Of course, consult your tax expert for those details if you are wondering if you are going to get that. That comes directly from the Tax Policy Center. The top capital gains rate in 2021 for a married couple, if you hit the surtax of those making at least $496,000, was 23.8%. On Thursday, reports surfaced the White House favored increasing the top capital gains tax rate for a married couple of at least making $1 million to 43.4%, the highest capital gains tax in U.S. history up to this point. Has been 39.8. That was back in 1978. We'll have more to say about that later as well. I hope I have time for everything I tell you I keep talking about later, but we will see. The average daily cost of a short-term vacation rental, wow, is up big time, up almost 30% from last year, or actually from 2019, not from last year, but from 2019. It just shows you how many people are dying to get down south and enjoy themselves. Of course, the average cost of building a new single-family home in the U.S. has increased substantially from last year. Lumber mills shut down nationwide in 2020, as long as 4 months in some cases, as home building demand accelerated. So that's not a good recipe for keeping prices down. Lumber imports in the U.S. have been impacted by a beetle plague ravaging Canadian forests. It comes from the National Association of Home Builders. And finally, the Tax Cuts and Job Act that we've talked so much about from 2017 increased that standard deduction for taxpayers in 2018. And as a result, people taking the standard deduction, which it was reported early on that less than 14% of people would take the standard or would itemize deductions going forward. But back in 2018, 70% of people took the standard deduction. Now it's 90% of people taking the standard deduction. Wouldn't it be nice just to have one piece of paper you wrote down? This is how much I made. This is what I owe. And this is what I get to keep. But unfortunately, it's not that simple. All right, let's take a quick break. When we come back, you probably heard a lot about inflation coming back into the market, and I know you're feeling it. Let's talk about when it comes back and how it's coming back, everything from labor to lumber. This is Your Money with David Hayes. Consistently, I get the question about inflation. This is something that's on a lot of people's mind. What about inflation? And I'm kind of like, well, what about it? Like, what are you worried about? Well, things costing more. Well, things always have cost more down the road than they do today. So inflation is not something new. It's something that's expected, something that we need a little bit of, not too much of, not too little of, but just the right amount, kind of like the porridge for the bears. And it's here. You know, we've heard a lot about inflation coming back into the market. I know Janet Yellen was pretty adamant about what was happening, what to expect. Then she backpedaled on Wednesday of this week in a Wall Street Journal article saying, oh, no, things are just fine. But I was watching NBC News World this week, and they were talking about people lining up to go into restaurants. But help wanted signs are everywhere, everywhere you turn. And supposedly there's a lot of people out of work, but really, but are they? When you look at the fact that we need these temporary workers, we need seasonal workers, we need restaurant workers, people just aren't coming back to work. This is a nationwide problem. You see it around here as well. I was at Papa Murphy's last week and had a, we will pay $200 for you to come work for us, like a signing bonus. I almost signed up for that. I thought, you know what, I have some time to spare in the evenings occasionally. Maybe I can go sling pizzas around. For $200, yeah, I'll sign up for that. But, you know, they also said on NBC, not me, that with the extra incentive that people have to be on unemployment, that it equates to a $16 an hour job. So at what point do some people get off the couch and get back to work? Is it $18? Is it $20? Then essentially you're working for $4 an hour. Is that enough incentive? I don't know. Certainly working at Crew Car Wash for $12 an hour seems like a fun job as I go through the car wash. The kids are always smiling and waving, waving, right? They're dying for workers as well. The only people that this applies to as far as applying for jobs are people like my son that did not have a job pre-pandemic. Had he had a job pre-pandemic and unemployment was there for him, I mean, I would hope that he would want to go to work just to have some fulfillment of, hey, I'm actually doing something. But there's a bunch of those kids out there that did not have a job before that are now working that would not apply or even be eligible for unemployment. So what did a business do? What do you do? Well, you have to pay more. How much? I don't know the answer to that. I know that we're supposed to roll this unemployment thing off in September sometime. I heard Montana actually said no more because we're not going to pay it anymore to get people back to work. They said their unemployment rate's down to like 3% in Montana. And I heard that from someone today. You know, I think every state, if they're going to allow it to be local, then I think every state should make the right decision for their own area as far as jobs go. But if you have to pay more, what happens? Well, then prices go up to cover it. Because if I have to pay someone more, right, to come work at my restaurant or anything, you name it, then I have to charge more. For nearly every business, wages is the highest expense, period, right? So what we need to understand it is now in our best interest, right, as the government is concerned, to keep those reported inflation numbers low, even though we're feeling it. We're feeling it in wages. We're feeling it in lumber. We're feeling it in going out to buy a screw, right, or a lug nut for your bass boat tire that blew out. That's not a personal comment, is it? Yes, it is. But we, you know, what would have cost $10 cost $20. And the reason the government needs to keep inflation numbers low is because they need to borrow money. And when they borrow money at low prices, that's because inflation is low. If the assumption of inflation is 3, 4, 5%, bond yields would not be at 1.6 on a 10-year or less on things shorter than that. So it keeps our borrowing costs low. It also gives us the capacity to borrow more. And also it keeps our biggest entitlement program, Social Security, from going up each year. So it is in the best interest to keep rates low, to keep inflation low from a governmental standpoint, from a planning standpoint. If you look at the month past, the monthly rise in CPI, which is Consumer Price Index, through the first quarter did show an upward trend. The CPI in January was up 0.3, it was up 0.4 in Feb, and up 0.6 in March. So that totals a little more than 1% in the first quarter alone. But the question is it really reflective of the truth about inflation? I don't think it really does. Because the government always makes their methods of measuring things, whether it's GDP, inflation, or unemployment, the way they want it to look. They tweak things to produce a better result, better result than what the report card would normally say. I'm kind of imagining my son, you know, he's in school, had the ability to change the metrics by which he was graded or the methodology or whatever the teacher used to calculate the grades. Would it be a huge surprise if all of a sudden he had more A's and B's and fewer C's and D's? And honestly, I don't know what my son's report card looks like, as he had finals week this week. All of it was online. All of it was a complete disaster for the most part from his standpoint. And so we'll see. It's funny, in college, you pay for their education, but you can't see what's happening. It's like you're totally financially responsible for this kid, but you have no control or any access to anything that they do or any grades. It's nuts. But the government always wants to make good stuff better, like economic growth, and the bad stuff worse, right? So then we look at unemployment or inflation. I mean, here's the thing. They always want the numbers to look the way they need them to look. So here's CPI. Let's talk about that. This is analyzing a basket of goods. The makeup of that basket has a big impact on the final CPI number. Here's an example. 11% of CPI is based on durable goods. That's like computers, cars, appliances. Non-durable goods like food and energy, that makes up 26% of CPI. And then services account for the remaining 62%. So that's like your rent, your health care, your cell phone service. I mean, you know what they all are. The thing the government excludes and includes from this basket can make a big difference in that final CPI number. But like back in 1998, in fact, the government significantly revised the CPI metrics. This came directly from the Bureau of Labor Statistics, and they said these changes were sweeping. So the changes to the CPI calculation are necessary, they say, because consumers change their preferences on new products or services that are emerging. I get that. But in 1998, the commission said that it was a bias in some opinions to calculate CPI the way they were, because they changed the weighting, like how much we do on this versus that. And they also changed, for instance, in the food category, if you looked at just meat as an example, or beef as an example, they say they're choosing to not eat filet and eat hamburger instead. Well, that's a significantly lower number. So the government, ironically, has always done this, and it's not a coincidence that following 1998, that we had a drop in inflation, and it's because of the way they calculated things. I went back and looked at this over and over and over, all kinds of different periods of time, and I really believe that we've been cooking the books for a really long time. Inflation is lower than it's probably likely is. It's because they're trying to, you know, do things to keep other things in check. So they say they want inflation. I think they do. They just don't want to report inflation, because if you start reporting inflation the way it is, then you have all of these other things that will happen. You'll have increase in Social Security payments. You'll have increase in bond yields because inflation is higher, and that's an indicator of where inflation is or where they expect it to go. And the Fed has used a variety of methods to calculate CPI for years, but there's also other inflation indexes like the CPIE, that's for the elderly, the CPIU, that's for the urban dweller. And when I look at planning for someone's future, I honestly don't care what the government reports as inflation. That's not my point. My point is to understand what they're reporting, what the consequences are, and that would be higher asset prices down the road if inflation is higher, and that gives you the permission to buy real estate at ridiculous prices or stocks at high prices or any of the other asset at higher prices because inflation is higher. But I always say plan for your own personal inflation rate. That's the number one thing you have to realize. What is my inflation rate? Where do I live? What do I do? Those are the things you have to plan for. We know healthcare is a little bit out of our control. We've been planning pretty high inflation rates on that for quite some time. We know your basic living expenses, which is, you know, just shelter and food, transportation, that's going to track at reasonable inflation rates, right? Maybe 2, maybe 3%. Discretionary expenses, I don't know about that. It's interesting because in the planning world, we have planned for years to increase people's spending by inflation each and every year, but we never do. I had someone in my office today that's been retired since 2014. We've not changed their income one iota. It's been exactly the same since the day they retired. They've not come in and said, oh, I need that 1, 2, or 3% bump in my income. We have a way of adjusting for that, right? And in fact, they've been saving money. We've been sending them the money. They've been saving the money. Now, last year was a little bit of an anomaly because a lot of people did that. But my point is that everyone has their own personal inflation rate. And I think you have to realize that and realize the government is probably underreporting certain things whenever they need it underreported, maybe being a little bit rambunctious when they don't. Like unemployment. You know, they decided a few years ago, if you haven't actively sought a job in the last 6 months, you're off the rolls. We're not counting you any longer. So those are the things that we've moved and pivoted on throughout the years to get the numbers to look the way we want them to look. And I'm not saying that you make any decisions based on that. This, it's more understanding what and how things work around you. Because when you know what's happening, you understand it, you can then react better. And that's what we've tried to do. So that's just more for FYI than anything else. Let's take a break. When we come back, just talk to Rod a little bit about this. Earnings season. On record, it's the strongest ever. And we were told these expectations were already baked into the market, but they weren't because we blew them out of the water. So we'll talk to Rod when we come back. This is Your Money with David Hayes.
Okay.
Welcome back, everyone. Your Money with David Hayes. Rod Holloway is with me now on the phone. And Rod, as I looked to last week, not this week, but at last week, you know, stocks kind of meandered around, sort of flatlining on a busy week of corporate earnings, ending the trading week a little bit lower. But the S&P and NASDAQ set new record highs at the start of the week, and then stocks kind of struggled to find some traction as the week wore on. We had dampening enthusiasm because of some of the rising COVID-19 infections in India and Japan. We had mounting inflation worries, which I just talked about in the previous section or segment. And then stocks finally caught a little lift from these massive quarterly earnings we've been seeing, because here we sit on the strongest earnings season on record. And we were told that the market had baked in every expectation of this screaming earnings season. And we've always said the market moves on expectations and then adjusts on reality. And what appears to be happening, it's adjusting on reality in a positive direction, because we've not only supported what we thought, but we seem to be blowing it out of the water.
Yeah, I think the key there is exactly what you said, that the market anticipated good earnings, but they're coming in considerably better. Now, we're not surprised that they're better. The CEOs and CFOs tend to do a better job of setting the expectations with the analyst at a level that they can come in above. So, so beating them isn't the surprise. It's how easily or handily they are beating them. But, of course, the market's already looking beyond that. So a big part of the market is what is the future outlook from the companies, which until this quarter we hadn't gotten much of a future outlook. Many of them were highly reluctant to give any future guidance because they didn't know what the heck was going on any more than anybody else did in regards to the pandemic and the potential reopening. They feel much more comfortable with where they're at right now in that regard. So they are beginning to talk and have a lot of that. But you're still just partially at a highly elevated level as far as your earnings multiple, which doesn't mean that you can't continue to go higher. We just seem to be a little bit in the pausing phase of, okay, these earnings are outstanding. They're talking positively about the future, and the market's just trying to gauge how positive the future may be and how much it can continue to accelerate. Because as I've talked on Glass's show, one of the things we have to realize, we're up roughly 11% year to date on the S&P 500. Mm-hmm. Well, you're not going to continue at that pace all the way through the end of the year, even if earnings are good or even outstanding. You're going to have to slow that pace of acceleration down a little bit. And I think that's where we're at a little bit right now, is just trying to weigh that out, in addition to the market trying to really grapple with where does it see the opportunities. Is it in the cyclical and reopening trades, or is it in the technology, which is the area that has had some of the best earnings reports and potential guidance to the future? And that seems to be where a lot of the turmoil is. It's beneath the surface, so we haven't had any big sell-offs, but beneath the surface, we most certainly have seen a fair amount of volatility bouncing back and forth between equity sectors.
So the beats, are they not being rewarded as much as the couple of misses we had that have been severely punished?
It was really varied. I mean, on certain companies, some of the large blue chip technology, it was kind of already baked into them. So it was almost a buy on the rumor, sell on the news. Mm-hmm. Then you did have some other of the higher flying technology that maybe even surprised the surprised upside, that they were rewarded for it. So it has been a bit of a mixed bag in the reward. Obviously, if you had a really good earnings and beat expectations, you probably didn't get sold off hard, but we know most certainly have seen some sell off the day of the earnings or the day after the earnings if it was reported after the bell closes. But most of them haven't been heavy selling for the most part, unless they didn't like the future guidance that came with the recent quarterly earnings.
So it would give people an idea why it makes sense to that the market is where it is today. I mean, the U.S. economy obviously is growing quickly. We've had a flashing of inflation in different areas. I think coffee's up like 8%, bread's up 11%, gasoline's up 22%, building costs is up who knows what percent. But yet Janet Yellen, she came out early, I think this week or maybe late last week, and actually kind of rang the warning signs a little bit, then backpedaled on Wednesday. So, oh, no, don't worry about it. Inflation's still really low. We need to get inflation cooking. And you didn't hear the last segment, but I was talking about how over the years, the government comes out with these numbers and they can manipulate them to kind of say what they want them to say. So if inflation, they want it to be low because they need the permission to print more money. They want to keep rates, they want to keep inflation low so rates stay down so the cost of their money is cheaper. They also want to keep inflation low so rates stay down, and then they don't have to pay as much in Social Security increases. But at the same time, you look across the sector and yeah, things are definitely costing more, which gives, you know, asset prices a boost. I mean, that includes stocks, real estate, you name it. And I think that's one of the reasons, but I want to hear you talk about this, that stocks are on the rise, right?
Yeah, I think a big part of it, in addition to those things you said, low inflation, low interest rates, and yes, inflation can be debated, but we're talking about the government number as they report it, not each person's individual inflation rate,
Amen.
Which may be completely different than what the government says. But I think a lot of it really goes back to pre-pandemic. Pre-pandemic, we had an economy in which the unemployment rate was considerably below 4%. Mm-hmm. And the Fed before that had thought full employment was probably around 4.5%. Well, we found out that, guess what, full employment is lower than that. And not only was employment doing extremely well, but we were beginning to see wage increases at the bottom end of the pay scale, which is extremely important as well, that we see that bottom end begin to come up. So I think that there is a fair amount of hope that as the economy recovers from the pandemic shutdown, that we can potentially get back to that economy we had prior to the pandemic. Because obviously, the only thing that dramatically changed where we were at from that point in time to where we stand today is the pandemic itself and the self-induced shutdown of our economy. So I think the market's still banking on the fact that we have an economic standing, take out the pandemic, that should allow us to trend back towards where we were before the pandemic hit.
You know, I was laughing with someone earlier that with the incentive to stay at home with unemployment and the lack of proof you have to provide that you're actually looking for a job, according to NBC News that I watched this week, it equates to $16 an hour. So you don't need a national minimum wage. You just need an unemployment supplement to keep it at $16 that I'm forced to pay, you know, $20 an hour just to get you off your couch and come hang out and work. But then, you know, if I pay you $20 and I used to pay you $12, guess what? That burger is going to cost you now $8 and not $4. So this is the way it goes.
Sure. Well, and even along those lines, because what some of these small businesses are finding, even $20 and $25 an hour
and drawing them
isn't
up the
enticing
couch.
Enough. Because guess what? You're earning $16 an hour on the couch.
Right. Right.
Versus $20 to $25 an hour, actually putting in an 8-hour day.
Well, they admitted that on NBC, which I was glad to hear them say that. But of course, they say that the jury's still out until September when it rolls off the books. The jury's not out, boys. The jury's in, and the foreman has spoken.
Well, I think the key in that, Dave, always is don't listen to a politician or the media. Listen to a small business owner.
Right.
He knows what he's up against when it comes time. He has no reason to come out and tell you that he has job openings that he can't fill if that isn't true.
Right.
So that's where I take it from, is what the small business owner says. And if he tells me he's having trouble finding people and he's offering $20 or $25 an hour, then I believe that there is a real effect of the enhanced unemployment on the job market itself. I don't care what politicians or the media have to say about it.
Yeah, and right in the HT this week on Wednesday had the same thing, struggling to hire despite recovery, more available workers, no more workers, says employers. And so, yeah, you don't have to wait till September. I know what the answer is. And, you know, I mean, I don't know. It's hard to explain. Rod, I want you to hang on for this next segment, if you don't mind, because I want to talk about all the different stimulus that has been proposed since January 20th of this year when President Biden took office and where we sit on things today. We'll be right back. This is Your Money with David Hayes. So in news of the week, I talked about you kind of need a scorecard to follow this, but the third stimulus proposal since taking office on January 20th, the American Families Plan is a $1.8 trillion proposal that directs money to child care and other things, but it doesn't really. I'm not even going to talk where it's going, just kind of talk about the numbers. Then you go back and look at the American Rescue Plan, that was $1.9 trillion. And then you look at the Americans Job Plan, that was $2.3 trillion. That was back on March 31st. We had, in the last month and a half or so, $5 trillion of spending that was proposed. And we talked about this last fall, Rod, that we didn't necessarily have an opinion of who was in the White House and how that affected the market. We did have an opinion. We said it didn't matter because it was driven on vaccinations coming out and rolling out in an effective way, and stimulus. And we have gotten more stimulus than anyone bargained for. I think we all knew an infrastructure package was coming. We thought probably a little more stimulus was coming, but to have $5 trillion proposed, the market it loves this stuff. They love it. It's like a drug, man. The more you give me, the more high I get, it seems like. But I'm just sitting here, you know, just thinking, I'm not going to get into the big picture items yet. I will in a little bit. But here we are, right? Another stimulus plan. The market loves money. It loves flooding the market with money. It loves the fact that we have vaccinations that are widely available for everybody, for the most part. We love the fact that that may cause people to kind of get back out and get back after it, which we see when I'm in Florida, man. I mean, there's no COVID down there. When I was in Florida, I was up in Mishawaka. There's no COVID up in Mishawaka. I mean, people are getting back to it. They want to get back to it. They want to take their mask off. They want to enjoy big gatherings. They want to go to the Indianapolis 500 and the Kentucky Derby. I mean, they want this bad. And I mean, I'm not going to get too in the weeds on this, but you know, different municipalities have different views on things, especially the leaders, and I'm not going to, again, get into that too much, but, I mean, I think everyone's a little bit frustrated with how certain things are handled certain places, but, here we are, Rod. I mean, stimulus. It's like a drug. You can't get away from it. It keeps giving the market new highs.
Yeah, it most certainly does, and that we've, in the previous segment, we had discussed what's driving this market, and we talked about, you know, the anticipation of getting back to an extremely strong economy we had pre-pandemic, in addition to that, the low interest rate and the low inflation. Now throw on top of that the added stimulus and all the liquidity within the economy, and that most certainly helps. I think the potential issue that it begins to create, and as you're saying, Dave, this isn't digging into the weeds of the specifics of the stimulus packages themselves, but this is what we had earlier this week when Janet Yellen, basically she just said what everybody really knows, which is if inflation begins to get too hot, the way you contain it or attempt to control it is increasing interest rates. Mm-hmm. Well, the market immediately sold off on those news. And we went through this coming out of the 08 crisis, maybe around 2010 or 2011, after you get some of that recovery. Eventually, the market gets so used to that drug that it doesn't want to let go of it. So it starts to react more positively to bad news than it does to good news, because good news may mean we start to pull the punch bowl away. Bad news means, hey, not only do we leave the punch bowl out there, but maybe we start dumping a little more jungle juice into that punch bowl for the people out there.
A little more foo-foo,
Exactly. And the reality is, if we're raising interest rates for the appropriate reason, which is that the economy is doing well and is able to stand on its own 2 feet without the Fed support, then it's okay for interest rates to start going back up. Holy cow, we used to see a 10-year treasury consistently at around 4.5%, and we haven't seen that in years.
Right.
So it is okay, but there's no doubt the market has an addiction to this liquidity, and it doesn't like talk of it potentially being taken away. So I do fear that we're starting to hit that tipping point as far as moving forward, that the market may respond better to bad news than it does to good news for fear of having those interest rates start to creep up and not have all of the liquidity in there. The only thing I'll add, Dave, as far as the infrastructure, the stimulus package and all of that, let's be honest, for it to truly be stimulus, you have to get a return on your investment.
Amen.
And there are a lot of things in the package that do not give a return on investment. That does not mean they should not be done and aren't good things, but let's be honest and transparent about what we're trying to do and not call something stimulus that has zero return on investment, but something that has a return on investment most certainly should be chalked up as stimulus. All worthy debates to have. Let's just not pretend that something is something that it is not.
Yeah. If you say I have a $1.9 trillion bill and $365 billion of it's stimulus, the rest of it's just kind of working on things that maybe we think we should work on. Mentioning Janet Yellen, she said on Tuesday she's neither predicting nor recommending that the Federal Reserve raise interest rates as a result of the Biden spending plans, kind of walking back the comments she made earlier that day when she said rates must rise at some point to keep the economy from overheating. So, yeah, we just got to understand where the information is coming from, digest it accordingly, and make good decisions going forward. Rod, great job as always, man. I'll see you back at the ranch.
All right, that sounds good, Dave. Talk to you later.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, I have so much to talk about, but let's talk about, Social Security, because I had this came up twice this week. People still working, wanting to take Social Security. Just a couple thoughts I would share. And then also, I want to talk about the Congressional Budget Office and some of their predictions on how we're going to pay for all this. You'll love it. We'll be back. This is Your Money with David Hayes. All right, so let's talk quickly about this. To pay for the plans, President Biden wants to increase taxes. They say it would generate enough revenue over the next 15 years to offset spending increases and expand the tax credits. That comes directly from the White House. Janet Yellen said on Sunday that interest rates are low, likely to remain low, but we need to have some fiscal space to be able to address emergencies. Well, then the CRFB came out and said that to pay for the $2.3 trillion infrastructure, we would increase deficits by $900 billion over 10 years. After that, the plan would begin to shrink deficits, and the debt would grow to 146% of GDP by the year 2041. They found that Mr. Biden's infrastructure plan would increase the debt over 10 years, but then start reducing it substantially by the year 2050 compared with current Congressional Budget Office predictions. I'm just telling you, folks, any prediction that they've ever made is wrong and wildly wrong. And you can go back and listen to 1,000 shows that I've done, and I have pointed this out time after time after time. So, you know, when you look at when Social Security was first introduced back in the 30s, they said that this is your part to pay, this is what your employer pays, and then they literally, in big bold letters, said this will never change. And this was in 1935 or 36. Things always change. I always say that whenever someone comes in and buys your business, I don't care who it is, whether it's a bank that bought your bank, whether it's a big venture capital company that buys your winery, whether I don't care what it is. They always say to the employees, hey, things aren't going to change. Things are going to remain the same. That just is literally, kind of a foreign language for saying, no, everything's going to change. Just not today. All right. That's the way it works. I'm just giving you a life lesson here. So I had a guy come in this week, two people come in, both under their full retirement age for Social Security. For most people now, it's like 66 to 67. You're going to be in that range right now. And they were like, hey, I'm going to sign up for benefits, but I'm going to keep working. I'm like, well, how much do you think you're going to make? Like 50 grand. Well, you don't want to sign up for Social Security, because for every dollar you make over almost like $18,900, they're going to keep two for every buck you earn. For every $2 in earnings, I'm sorry, for every two you make, they're going to keep one back. And if you get over 50, for every $3 you earn, they're going to keep a buck. So if you figured it out that, you can sign up for it. Instead of getting $2,300 a month, you're going to get about $500 a month. And you can do that if you want to. I don't think it's very smart. But here's the thing that no one really talks about. The money they don't send you. So guess what? That doesn't get penalized for taking it early. That gets the delay credits that we've all talked about. Know that when you get to full retirement age, you can make whatever you want and still collect your full benefit. So even though he's taking less money now with the delay credits, once he hits full retirement age in about a year and some change, then he'll return back to a pretty healthy number at that point. And I can argue that that's not always a bad thing to do. Kind of based on your personal situation, your health situation, your marital status. I mean, all that goes into play. It's not always the best thing to do to wait. Now, I know we preach wait, because that seems mathematically to work out the best, especially if you're going to live a normal life expectancy, right, of 87, 88, 90, whatever it might be, But the reality is every situation is different. So if you have a situation in front of you, I have this entire guide called, Seize Today, Secure Tomorrow. It's your field guide, my field guide to Social Security. We have a version that we can share with the public that's not for professional use only. If you'd like one, send me an email over at cfci.us. That's cfci.us. Contact us. Just say, I want Social Security guide. I'll send it to you. It's really good. It talks about the break-even points. It talks about all the things that you guys want to know. Taxation on Social Security. It talks about even Medicare. A little bit on the surtax charge, like once you get over a certain income limitation, it talks about taking it early. All of it's in there, but it gives you an idea, at least educates you on Social Security. Still, even though a lot of the claiming strategies have been taken out of our wheelhouse and our quiver, it's still a very, very complicated topic for most people. So if you'd like this Seize Today, Secure Tomorrow guide that I have for Social Security, please email me at cfci.us. We'll just send you a PDF of it. It's pretty simple. you can use it and abuse it and share it and whatever you want to do else with it. All right, that's all I have time for this segment. I got to take a quick break. We'll come back, kind of wrap up the big show. It's Your Money with David Hayes. Welcome back to the big show, Your Money with David Hayes. We're kind of wrapping up a show that, you know, I put together because I have so many questions when it comes to inflation, like worry about inflation. I understand that, but, you know, you just have to play the game, get in the game, you know when to get out of the game. And that's kind of what we're trying to do here for everybody. What's fun for me this week, it is Thursday. As you're listening to the show, maybe you catch it on Saturday mornings at 9 or on WGCLradio.com. Always after the show on Thursday, it airs online. And then iTunes and Google Play, you can catch the podcast there at your leisure. But we have an annual office fishing tournament, and we are doing that on West Boggs Park in beautiful Lagodi, Indiana. And I sent out the text last night, Wednesday, just saying, hey, here's when we're leaving the ramp, 7 a.m. We're checking in at 1. We're eating Mexican and Odin at right after that to tell what we did and, you know, stories and lives and everything that fishermen do. So I sent that out, and I look here at my phone now and have no less than possibly 40 responses from the group, and it is trash talking galore. So even whenever Wayne, who had a really good one here, he says that this is going to be an epic year for sure. Josh and Doug Hughes and Josh Holden out pre-fishing bogs right now. Dean and Adam Puckett's my partner. Adam is, of course, the 2019 collegiate national champion bass fisherman. He's on my team. Glass told me that's like the mafia running the lottery there because I fish bogs a lot, and Adam is a collegiate champion and fished in the professional FLW, finished like 20-something. And he's my partner, so he said that's like the mafia running the lottery. Yeah, it was hilarious. He's talking about Belcher's dad fishing every other day, us fishing bogs twice a year, you know, and then excuses. So only thing Wayne said he would be guaranteed to win. He said Larry and I will for sure win the Mexican food eating and drinking contest, and he'll be in charge of the prize money for that one. So it should be a fun time. I'll report back, but I can already tell you Adam and I will absolutely win unless just something happens, like some eclipse of the moon or something crazy happens, because his dad, Dean's not a bad fisherman. I fish with Dean. Dean outfishes me most of the time. So we'll let you know next week on how the CFCI fishing tournament unfolded. And for that, I've got to pretty well let y'all go. But if you want that Seize Today, Secure Tomorrow guide to Social Security, I'm serious, please email me at cfci.us. It kind of goes through a couple channels before it gets to us, but it will get to us. And just say, I want the Social Security guy, and I will have that emailed out to you, I promise. Until then, guys, have a great weekend, and I'll talk to you next week. Bye-bye.
The preceding program was brought to you by Comprehensive Financial Consultants and CFCI, which is solely responsible for its content. Securities are offered through J.W. Cole Financial, member FINRA and SIPC. Investment advice offered through CFCI and J.W. Cole Advisors. J.W. Cole Financial, J.W. Cole Advisors, and CFCI are unaffiliated entities.